Okay, I'm just going to sort of round things off a bit, I hope. But I'm going to come back to the very beginning of the weekend when I opened this book and read out this triad. Three quests are obtained from Powys. First of them is the fetching of Mingan the horse from Maigin to Llanishan by 9 the next morning to receive privileges from Cadwallon the Blessed after the slaying of Iaith and Griffri. The second is the fetching of Griffri to Bryn Griffri before the following morning to attack Edwin. The third is the fetching of Howell, son of Iaith, to Ceredigion from the Rock of Gwyn Gwynedd to fight with Iaith and Iago in that battle. Now, the field that was set up in a way by that triad appearing for us is this sense of the connection between non-linearity and linearity. The mysterious connection between ourselves here and now and people who are long dead. And the sense of making a movement backward in time, into the depths. Now in that place, what has to be negotiated is the paradox that presents itself is in the speaking of that, we are suddenly both here and there. So we follow the horse in a way to Cadwallon the Blessed to receive the privileges of the other world. We ride backwards. And we learn the story, or something of the story, of the slaying of Iaith and Griffri. Having heard that story, we go back further, deeper, to the place where Griffri is brought to Bryn Griffri to attack Edwin. So we're back with an old battle. And then the third place, further back still, is the fetching of Howell to the Rock of Gwynedd, from the Rock of Gwynedd rather, to Ceredigion, to fight with his father. So we go back into the breaking of ancestral lines, the breaking of relationship between generations. So what we're doing here in a certain sense, in that as we stand in both worlds at once, as we connect the inside, the outside, the ancestral past with the immediate present, is we address the privileges, we are given the privileges and the blessings of the past. We encounter old conflicts and we seek to repair the breakages in the ancestral lines. We start to repair, or try to repair, aim to repair, the fissures between ourselves and the wider universe. Now the talks, the exercises, the practices that we've done together are in a way all in that service. So we work with blessing and conflict, old wars, but holding all, bridging, being the bridge, bidbon bidbont, we're the living bridge between opposites that enables something new to come into being and old wounds to be healed. It's like in the part of the Prithayanun, the prisoner, we hear the song of the prisoner. So this particular triad has brought us to the song of Griffri, Yago, Yayav, and Howell. And the mystery of their lives. And simultaneously brings us to the reflection of their lives in our life. And the profoundly interconnected fractal nature of things. In the process, we have to look at identity. If we bridge between the worlds, who are we if we bridge between the worlds? What happens when we bridge between the worlds? What happens when the linear and the non-linear come together in the marriage? What happens when all the elements, including evanescence, are gathered at that marriage? What happens is war, tumult, conflict, difference coming together. What happens is death and resurrection. In a certain sense, you could say that, you know, the story of Edwin, of Cadwallon, of Iagu and Yayav and Howell, is reborn in us today, because we remember them. We don't know who they are, but their lives somehow touch our lives. Somehow speak across the generations, across the language gap, across the massive difference in time and space between us. We inhabit the same space for a moment of time. And with us in all these endeavors is this mysterious figure of Taliesin, who is everywhere and is everything, and simultaneously is little Bach, little Gwion Bach, tiny Gwion. And so there's that powerful kind of reminder that we are little and big, that we are here and there. That there is stability and movement. We've continued to return to the mound, which is the stable place, but each time we return to the mound, something different happens. We learn to take each other to the mound. Something different happens. We come to the mound today, we encounter the guardian of the forest. Something different happens. We are genuinely dealing with the mysterious and the intersection of the mysterious with the known. So we don't want to get lost in the mysterious, and we don't want to block the mysterious. And so it is that, again, this marriage of opposites, this kind of, not exactly fusion, but dialogue of difference that creates something new. And we're all dependent on each other in this. You know, this weekend is co-created between us, between whatever I come with, whatever you come with. We sit down together, and whoever's apparently doing something, we're all doing something together. I mean, a lot of the time, obviously, because of this shape of this, I'm sitting here spouting, talking. But I can only talk to your needs and wishes, even though I don't really know what they are in the moment of talking. You know, we're back with the image of the prisoner. The journey happens because of the song of the prisoner. The prisoner sings because of the raid upon Anuvin. You know, it's who comes chicken, egg, chicken, egg, chicken, egg. Tis a mystery. But what the triad says to us in some ways, I suppose, what this, you know, if we try to take the triad seriously, this apparently inconsequential little triad. It talks about the interconnectedness through time and space and language and culture. It talks about the necessity to touch old conflicts and reach, to keep reaching back and in. This powerful image of the horse that goes to the Blessed King. So in a certain sense, what we've done this weekend, I suppose you could say, is we've ridden with Maegwin. We've ridden with Maegwin to the place of conflict and blessedness. To the place where generations are separated from each other, but also to the place of privilege and blessing. That's received from Cadwallon, the blessing, or the source of blessing, wherever that source happens to be. And there's a lot in it of movement. We move from one place to another place. We are fetched from one place to another place. Not just moved, but fetched, called, gathered up and carried almost by the energies of the other world, maybe. And then with the energies of the outer world. You know, everything paralyzes us. Just as we have this weekend, we've gone in here, we've come out. We've gone in, we go out. You know, we've been in, we're all going to go out in a bit. And come back again in a few weeks. Now, one of the key things, the thing that we've done this weekend, in a way, is this place where you have drawn each other, you have fetched each other into the other world. This is the fetching that the triad talks about. And the thing to remember about that is how actually quite straightforward it was. If you just allow and trust yourself and let the process happen. Okay, it's not easy work, this, because trusting the process is hard, but it's not difficult or complex work. It is about paying attention to yourself, paying attention to the other, and then allowing something to come. You know, this little triad, if you get interested in it, will say more things to you. The thing about the triads is that you know, even as we pay attention to them, and it's true of any traditional material, it starts to talk back more.
What number is that?
55. The three quests that are obtained from powers. And the great thing about this material, it speaks through irritation in some ways. It hangs around inside us, and the yagu and howl and they just hang around somewhere inside your psyche and something starts to talk. And it's about not stopping the process and getting interested in where it goes. But in that very process, you then start to discover the habitual blocks and issues that you have. So as you start to explore it, you hit into your own issues about that try to stop the process. I'm doing it too quickly, or oh, it's very frightened. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. Nothing's going to happen. Yeah, I never see anything. Right, so these are the sort of habitual, and that's part of the process. Or I pick up the card and I think, no, I don't want that. And again, the whole principle of inclusion, of trusting everything that happens and not splitting, is the crucial, difficult thing to do. Trying to stay with, okay, can I include that? Can heaviness and come to the feast here? I'm just going to finish by just reading a couple of bits of Alan Garner, because he more than anybody all of this slightly random, so forgive me, but they're just nice things to kind of, they're just nice things to take away, really. So I'm just going to read you a little bit of, he got very interested in Australian Aborigines. Strandloper, yes. Wonderful novel, yes. That fuses the traditions of this land with the traditions of Aboriginal Australia. It's a wonderful book. Strandloper.
Which I think is a beach. Strand is a beach, isn't it?
It's a beach, yeah. It means the man who jumps over, crosses the beach or something, yeah. Yes. Crotches the strand. So what he says here is, from myth came the totemism of the Aboriginal Australian, and an awareness that amounts to symbiosis with the land. For the Australian, the ancestor exists at the same time under the earth, in ritual objects, in places such as rocks, hills, springs, waterfalls, and as spirit children waiting between death and rebirth. And most significantly, in the man in whom he is incarnate. It is a worldview close to the one I discovered for myself as a child of my family on Alderley Edge in Cheshire. Through the mediation of myth, the Aboriginal Australian has not only a religious nobility of thought, but coincident with the real earth, a mystical geography, a mystical sequence of time, a mystical history, and through the individual, a mystical and personal responsibility for the universe. Ritual initiation of the individual is the assumption by the individual of this knowledge and responsibility. When an Aboriginal Australian boy is initiated into manhood, the sacred places of his people are visited, the sacred rites performed to help the boy to remember. For this boy, this reincarnated ancestor has to recall the primordial time and his own most remote deeds. Through initiation, the novice discovers that he has been here already in the beginning, Alt-Jira, the dreaming. It is a second coming, it is a holy communion. To learn is to remember. In classical Greece, the word is Amensis, and was first expounded to us by the father of Western philosophy, Plato. There are many differences between the Australian Altagira and Greek Amensis, but both are a spiritual activity, philosophy for the Greek, life itself for the Australian. I'm not advocating rejection of sophisticated values in favour of primitive animism. I am a rationalist, a product of the classical Mediterranean, and an inheritor of 2,500 years of Western thought. I need Manchester Grammar School just as much as I need Alderley Edge, but I do need them both. My concern in writing and in life is that by developing our greatness, the intellect, we should not lose the other greatness, our capacity to dream. The two can work side by side, even if it means that I have to imagine a railway system to get me to my desk. Achilles can walk in Altagira. Indeed, he must. He has such a lot to remember. Not the least of the memories is that to live as a human being is in itself a religious act. That is why the stories must be told. And he's talking about his writing. The dance goes on and will, for it has led me to see what has always given spring to my steps, why my books are eternally different, eternally the same. The Aborigine would call it my dreaming, my song and my dance. The books are a vehicle for and then marker of the journey. 'Tis why once my duty to them has been discharged, I have no further interest in them per se, which is not to claim that I disparage them. They are swept up and still exist in the cumulative intricacy and simplicity of the dance. Already, Strandloper, the book he's just written, is taking its place, giving way to the new song that it has made possible by my writing of that portion of spiritual autobiography. Made possible by so many people, foremost among the Southern Sibyl, William Buckley, and in particular my wife and our children, who had to live the soaking and the waiting. The magpie must also be given his due. He is not quite the random thief I may have made him. It's not by chance that he occurs as a principle in Aboriginal creation myths. Without the magpie, the book would not be as it is, nor would I be as spiritually enlarged as I now find myself to be. I awoke one morning with that imperative voice in my head. I had learned that voice is also known to the Aboriginal mind and held as the source of inspiration. It is called the voice that thunders. And then finally, for me, the Mabinogion is less a text than a state of mind. Despite the onomastic tent pegs, the Mabinogion, though it may not fall into the sea, does not stay fixed. It is, as one example, all around me where I live in East Cheshire. Late this summer, as I began the research for my next book, I came across a reference to a field 12 miles from my house, which was called in 1841 Osbaldiston Croft. I went. There, against the dry stone wall, was a menhir, previously unrecorded. The name is pure Old English and means the stone of the shining god. But I think it is a translation of what, 4 miles away, is the green chapel of Sir Gawain, a dramatic natural fissure in the rock. Its name, through recorded time, has been Ludchurch. Osbaldiston led me up into a hanging valley called Thursbitch, which means the valley of the demon, from where I could look down on my native hill and its sleeping hero. I saw from a vantage point of 1,900 feet that I inhabited a mythic landscape, at the far side of which rose Moel Vamaw, the Hill of the Mothers, a sacred Welsh mountain. The only thing about it that was English was the language of its present occupants. As we went along the valley of the demon, my wife pointed out the gateposts were too big and shaped quite differently from the normal Pennine style, and many were of different stone. Then, high in the valley and away from the single ruin of human habitation, first there was a well, built of stone, going down into the ground with a collapsed roof. Then we came to stones that had not been moved and were pecked, worked by stone, not metal. And the present evidence that it is a megalithic complex connected to a stellar cult, possibly of Orion. But as I stood at the head of the valley next to a brook, my hand on an indisputable menhir with a neat hole bored through it as if by a projectile, I thought, and there the stone is on the bank of Bolchin River in Saltus Ford, and the hole through it. And thus begins this branch of the Mabinogi. And in a way, what we have to let ourselves discover is that we all live in sacred time and sacred landscape. And we are all beginning our own branch of the Mabinogi, the tales of youthfulness, the tales of the tales that unite the worlds. So let's just sit together for last five minutes.
Mabinogion is
the Welsh for Mabinogion.
Oh, right.
it's just the Mabinogi. So if you came across Mabinogion in Welsh, they would call it the Mabinogi. Right. So it's just a slightly different pronunciation. So let's just sit together, be with whatever you're with, just for the last few minutes. Thanks a lot, guys. Look after yourselves in your journeys home. Yeah. See you soon. That one definitely isn't. I can't remember when I put that up. That might be a bit newer. Yeah, only last year. Yeah, doesn't mean that. Yeah, it's nice though, isn't it? Yeah.
Nanny make that?
No, it was a druid's off a Mobot. Is this your Mobot, Ben? The woman who makes it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Sharon, that's it. Sharon. Yeah.
Had it done, it would have been knitted.
No.